And we're holding on Pei Aleph on the Beis by the second Mishnah. Mishnah says, so now that we talked about in the previous two Mishnayos, we talked about cases where Beis Din can't give a person Misas Beis Din, but instead they do something else to cause his death. So now we have something else. Now we have another group of things where there's a different type of extrajudicial punishment, namely Beis Din doesn't deal with him, but other people do. Mishnah says, "Agoin of a kasva, somebody who steals a kasva." We're going to see in the Gemara that kasva means a clay shardus. We're going to see where that word comes from. "V'amakalol b'koisim," or a person curses Hashem using a koisim in the name of a, like this we learned earlier in the Masechta about the issue of Birkas Hashem, that it involves a person using one name of Hashem, so to speak, against the other. Yake Yosi es Yosi, where Yosi stands for a name of Hashem. Here we're talking about that instead he substitutes for one of them, he uses the name of Avodah Zarah, or the name of a koisim, as we'll see in the Gemara. The Haboil Adamis and a Yid who has relations with a Goita, in all those cases, Kanoyin Poigenboy, people who are zealous for the honor of Hashem, can go and kill him. So these are not things that are done officially by Beis Din, but these are things where a Kanai has the rights to do that. In particular, as far as Boreal Aramis, of course, we're going to talk at great length about the most famous example of that in Jewish history, which is Zimri, Cosby, and Pinchas. The Maharal, by the way, makes the point, the same way as you have by a husband where he sees that his wife is not behaving the way that he should, and he's mekaneh to her, same shodesh kufnun aleph, the same way over here, a yid goes astray from the Eivishter and his worship and is getting involved with a goita, so therefore it uses the same word kanai in connection with him. The Mishnah continues, Kohen Sheshimish Betumah, if a Kohen was serving in the Beis Mikdash when he's Tomei, Ein Echav HaKohenim Aviyin Oysel Beis Din, his fellow Kohenim don't bring him to Beis Din to get judged. Rather, the young, this is another example, basically, of Kanoim Poigenboy, the young Kohenim would take him outside the Azara, or Mafsinas Moichabig Zirin, and they would smash his skull with sticks. So in other words, again, the idea is it's not something that Beis Din is necessarily going to deal with. We leave it up to the Kanoim among the young Kohenim to deal with such a person and to give him what he deserves. Reb Moshe has a couple of interesting chuggas on a number of these dinim in Igros Moshe, a couple of letters back to back that he discussed with his grandson, a couple of different things involving these dinim over here. One point he makes is that same way as the Gemara is going to tell us, as far as the Boreal Aramis, that can only be b'shas ma'isa, only when he's actually doing the act, the same way over here with the Kohen doing the Avodah, for example, it would have to be actually be that they catch him in the act, not that he did it before, and then they realize afterwards. continues the Mishnah, Zor Sheshimish B'Mikdash, if a Zor, a non-Kohen, does the Avodah in the Beis Mikdash, Rabbi Akiva Omer B'Chenek, Rabbi Akiva says he's going to get Chenek for that, B'Chum say no, there's only Mr. B'Dei Shemayim for that, Beis Din doesn't give him Chenek, as we'll learn in the Gemara what the reason behind their Machlokas is. So the Gemara starts off, my kasva, when we said in the Mishnah a person steals a kasva, what does that mean? Amar of Yehuda, kli shoreis. It means that he stole one of the clay shoreis from the Beis Mikdash. V'cheinu Omer, v'eis ksois ha-nosach, as we find, the Torah describes by the Shulchan, you have the ksois ha-nosach. Now there's a machlokas that Rashi mentions in Parshas Truma. You have two things, the ksovois and the menachios. One of them is the little half tubes that they had between one lechem upon them and the next to keep them from going moldy. And the other one, between ksovois and menachios, is the frames they had on the side to hold them up. Rashi mentions that there's different opinions which one is which, but in any case, we have the words ksois hanosach, the ksois that are used to cover the lachem upon him. So we see that the word kasva means a piece of the shulchan. So we're giving that as an example. The Meiri says, practically speaking, they're tiny little things, so therefore it's easier for a person to steal them than others. But the same thing would be if he steals any of the other clay shardes. The Gemara says, where do you have a remez to this concept that a person should be chayav misa for such a thing? So, because the pasuk says when it talks about the Levim packing up the Mishkan to travel from place to place, v'loya voyu liros, they should not come to see kivalas hakodesh, when the kodesh, when the holy things are being swallowed up. Meaning, in other words, so the simple meaning, in other words, is it's talking about the Levim shouldn't be there when the Kohanim are wrapping up the Kalim. They come only afterwards, after the Kohanim have finished wrapping them up, so they shouldn't see as they're being placed into their respective cases. But nevertheless, we have a remez over there also for the idea of hiding, as in the person steals it and hides it away to take it out of the Beis Mikdash, so they shouldn't see. Kivalas HaKodesh V'mesu, and then they would die. So we have a hint there for the concept of a person hides and steals something of the Klei Sharis, then he's so again, there's no explicit mitzvah for that. Basically, Hashem will deal with him, but the Kanoim can be poisoned by. So the fact that the Gemara mentions over here that there's a remez on it, by the way, is an interesting point. The Rambam and the Ramban disagree on this. You have we just started again the Sefer HaMitzvahs for those who are doing it. One thing is we have the Shoshim of the Rambam that where he determines what's considered in the 613 mitzvahs or not. And one thing he mentions is this can't be counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs because it's not an explicit mitzvah in the Torah. Here the Gemara is saying it's only a remez. On the other hand, the Rambam even learns that there's no mitzvah b'dei shamayim for it. There's strictly this kanoim poigim boy, and that's that. The Ramban, on the other hand, learns that it should actually be counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs. So the Gemara continues. B'hamakal b'koisim chula. The next case was a person who curses with koisim. So what does that mean? Tony W. Yosef, yaka koisim es koismoi. It means the person says that the koisim should strike koismoi. Now, koisim means the actual magician. Maloshim koisim ksamim. The koismoi, Rashi explains, means is his way of referring to Hashem, who gave this person the ability to do ksamim. So in other words, instead of the classical Birkas Hashem is Yake Yosias Yosi, where he's using Hashem's name as, so to speak, the subject and the object of the sentence. Here we're saying that he's speaking disrespectfully and blaspheming Hashem, but he's saying the one that should do this would be a koisim, would be a magician rather than Hashem himself. So therefore, so for that, again, he definitely did something chutzpahdik, but he's not actually chayav mitzvah based in for it. Nevertheless, we're saying kanuim poigim boy. There are other ways of explaining this as well, but maybe. Does it mean actually? Does he actually use the words yaka koisim es koismoi, or does he mean yaka koisim es yudke vovke instead of zuos? Is the Gemara just using koismoi over here as a euphemism kind of? Minchas Chinuch actually discusses that point. That's one way. Rabbanan v'itemer of Mori Amri, the Rabbanan, or some say specifically Rabba Bar Mori, said that the lotion that this person uses is Yaka Koisim Loi or Koinoi or Makne. May the Koisim strike him, meaning the other person that he's talking to, or the koino or the maknoi, and the one to whom, and the one who owns him, and the one to whom, and the one who gives him goodness. So therefore, koino and maknoi refers to Hashem. Koino, he's koino the world, koino hakor, like we say in davening, and he's makne, he gives to people his goodness. So koino and maknoi are both terms for Hashem, and this person is saying that the koisim should strike and affect this person, as well as he's using this expression against Hashem, and therefore also, so he's not using the classical yaka yosi as yosi, but nevertheless, he can still be chayav mitzvah for that. The Rambam, by the way, understands that kosim over here refers to Avodah Zorah, so he's using a name of Avodah Zorah to curse Hashem. So again, kanoim poigim boy when necessary. The Yerushalmi actually brings over here that there was a certain nation called Naftai, that was their regular type of, that was their regular type of curse. Yakeu koisim loyo lakoino lamakno. So that's why the Gemara brings this loshen. The Mishnah continued, Raboyol Adamis. The Mishnah continued that a Jewish man has relations with a goita, then kanoim poigim boy. So the Gemara first. So first of all, before we get into that din of kanoim poigim boy, bominir of kahana me rav. Rav kahana asks rav loy pogu boy kanoim mav. What happens to this Yid if Kanoim did not go and kill him? Does he get off scot-free? And by the way, you know, the Rambam points out in Hilchos Isurei Biyah that in a way this is worse than any of the other Biyas Asuras. All the other Biyas Asuras, even if they have a child, the child is going to be a mamzer, but he's for a Yid. Here a Yid is taking the Kedusha of a Yid and bringing it into Goyishkeit, and then his child is not even considered a Yid. There's actually a Sicha in Chelek Ches where the Rebbe analyzes this whole matter of Kanoim Purgenboy and all the dinim surrounding it, and then this whole and that Rambam about there's a hefset in it, Shein B'chol Arayis, and then it goes into some arichos over there discussing the idea behind it, the explaining among other things that exact point. In other words, that we're saying that so we're going to, as we're going to see soon, it only works b'shas maisa. You can't kill him after the fact. It has to be he catches him in the act, like with Zimri and Cosby. On the other hand, we're saying that so we're saying there's this hefset gadol that you never find anywhere else. And the idea is basically any other avera a person does, the avera is any other avera a person does, then he's doing an avera, but here he's breaking down the barriers between a yid and a goy. This is a much more serious thing. On the other hand, only b'shas maisa is he doing it, and like afterwards it stops. Afterwards it's not the same, it's not the same effect anymore, which is why the kanoyim can be pregeh by only b'shas maisa. And he goes on and explains that this whole thing, it has to do with the nekudas hayahados, it has to do with the essential, the pintel of yid, which is why only Kanoim can deal with him, and Basin can't deal with it because it's beyond the whole concept of the Torah, basically, and the whole Sicha where the Rebbe analyzes different angles of this whole story, as well as we'll go through and we'll see. A number of Mephoshim point out, by the way, it does have to be in all these cases that we know, Taka, that the guy who's doing it is a Kanoi, and if not, then he has no right to do it in the first place. Anyway, so Rav Kahana asks Rav, so what happens if Kanoim don't get him? Well, the Gemara says, "In shiye Rav le Gemara." Rav forgot what he had learned about this, so he didn't know what to answer Rav Kahana. Akriyuhu l'Rav Kahana b'chelme. That night, Rav Kahana was read the following pasuk in a dream. Pasuk from the Navi Malachi. In his times, there was a big problem, where, among other things, with Jews intermarrying, Jewish men intermarrying. The Gemara in Megillah, by the way, says, according to one opinion, that Malachi is Ezra, and we find Ezra had to deal with that kind of thing as well. But even according to the opinions that they're not the same person, they at least lived at the same time. Anyway, the pasuk says, "Bogda Yehuda, Yehuda has been disloyal, v'se'eva nests of Yisrael of Yerushalayim, and disgusting things have been done in Yisrael and in Yerushalayim, ki chilo Yehuda kodesh Hashem asher ohev." Yehuda has desecrated the holiness of Hashem, whom he loves, meaning that Hashem loves the Jewish people, and here the Jewish people are going against him. Oval bas keil mecher, and they've had relations with the daughter of an alien god, with Goetis. So that was the pasuk that Rav Kahana was told that night in his dream. Also, Amalei, so he came and told Rav that this is what it was. Amalei, hochi akriyun, this is what I was read in my dream. Adkiri, Rav the Gemara, that jogged Rav's memory, and now he remembered that, yes, I remember now what I learned on this pasuk, and from this pasuk you'll have your answer, what happens to this Boyol Aramis when there's no Kanoim. So he darshins as follows. Bogda Yehuda zu avodas kochavim. The first part of the pasuk, Yehuda has been disloyal, refers to worshipping avodah zarah. V'cheinu omer, as we find, the pasuk, came begadtem bi, beis Yisrael, ne'um Hashem, that the Navi says to the Jewish people, the same way as a woman is unfaithful to her husband, the same way you have been unfaithful to me, Jewish people, says Hashem, ne'um Hashem. So that's referring to them worshipping avodah zarah. Marshall points out the name Yehuda itself contains the name Yudke Vovke in it. So Bogda Yehuda means, in other words, that they've been disloyal against their very own name, against the name Yehuda, which includes the name Yudke Vovke. Anyway, Rav continues, when the pasuk continues with say Eva Netzab Yisrael Yerushalayim, disgusting things have been done in Yisrael and Yerushalayim. What do we mean by v'teva? Zeh mishkav zocher. That refers to that there were Jews over there who were doing mishkav zocher. V'chein ho'omer, as the pasuk calls this teva, v'es zocher lo'is mishkav mishkav e'isha te'eva hi. Now there are other things, and there are other mitzvahs in Torah, there are other isurim in Torah that are called te'eva as well. But here, in connection with we're talking as the pasuk continues, uval baskel necher, then we understand that this is a type of bia as well. Next, when the pasuk continues kichilul Yehuda kodesh Hashem, when the pasuk continues that Yehuda has desecrated the holiness of Hashem, zuzoina, that refers to that they've been involved with zoinus. Where we see that the word kodesh is related to that, v'cheinu omer lo yir kodesh or lo tiyah kdesha mibnei Yisrael, where the pasuk says that there should not be a kodesh and there should not be a kdesha among the Jewish people. So here in the printed Gemara it says yir kodesh, on the side of it here it says it's supposed to be lo tiyah kdesha mibnei Yisrael. The point being, in other words, those mitzvahs are that a Jew, that a, whether man or woman, is not allowed to have a relationship outside of marriage. So therefore, so that when they're involved with a zoyner, then they're being over on that. So then the pasuk continues. The words asher ohev, by the way, meforshim on the pasuk discuss different possibilities. The words asher ohev can refer to Hashem, kodesh Hashem asher ohev, the holiness of Hashem, who Hashem loves the Jewish people, and they're talking and they're doing against him. Or the other possibility is asher ohev goes with the next phrase, uval baskel mecher, that they loved and have had relations with goyish women. Anyway, so the vav bas kel necher zabala kosis. This refers to a Jewish man who has relations with a goyter. Now, uchtiv basre. Now the next pasuk continues. What is the punishment of this last one? So now the next pasuk is going to mention the punishment, but the Meiri points out that the Gemara is assuming that it refers only to the last named thing, namely the vav bas kel necher. So the pasuk continues. Yachlis Hashem lo isha she yasena. Hashem will cut off for the man who does such a thing, who has relations with a goyter. Er v'oyner, an er or an oyner. Literally, er means awake, and oyner means replying. We're going to see what that means. Me'aleke Yaakov, from the God of Yaakov, or Be'aleke Yaakov is actually how it says in Me'ohale Yaakov is actually how it says in the pasuk, from the tents of Yaakov. Umagish mincha l'Hashem tzvokos, and anyone who brings a mincha to Hashem, which means, in other words, so what does this mean? Im tamad chacham, if this person is a tamad chacham, then his punishment is going to be lo yia like er b'chachamim v'oyne b'talmidim. He will not have any descendants who are, meaning even he has another Jewish wife as well, and he has children with her, but he's not going to have any ones who are awake among the chachamim, meaning who are sharp and able to take their place among the chachamim, v'oyne b'talmidim, or even a person among the talmidim who will be capable of answering and discussing. So in other words, his children will be amir oretz. So it means not only it can mean that that even if he's a Talmud Chacham, and sometimes you do have the children of Talmud Chachamim tend to take after their fathers, here the Eivishter will arrange that it won't, that he won't. It can also mean that some of the Mephoshim explain, and if he's not a Talmud Chacham and not a Koyan, as we're going on to say, then he gets Kores. But in other words, if he's a Talmud Chacham, then instead of Kores, you can have this, which in a way will be worse for a Talmud Chacham, that his children end up being Amir Oretz. We call him Er, Marshal points out. We learned earlier in the Masechti, if a person sleeps in the Beis Medrash, his Torah ends up getting ripped to shreds because he doesn't really learn properly. So therefore, Er, an awake person, can be used as a nickname for a Talmud Chacham. The im koyen hu, and if he's a koyen, lo yileh ben magish mincha l'Hashem tzvokos, he will not have any children who are able to bring a korban to Hashem, meaning in other words that his children won't be able to serve in the Beis Mikdash. Again, not obviously his children with the goyter, they're not koyim anyway, they're not even Jews, but we mean children that he'd have from other wives of his. So that would be in those cases, and in any case, there's kores involved as well. The Gemara calls it kores midibre kabbalah. There's the fact that the pasuk says yachris Hashem implies that there is kores involved. It's called kores midibre kabbalah. That it doesn't say in the psukim in chumash that there's kores, but we learn from this pasuk in Nevi'im. Okay. So the Gemara continues. So that's the answer to Rav Kahana's question, that he gets kores, and instead of that, you have these punishments that he has no nachas from his children. The Gemara continues. In this connection, a Jewish man has relations with a goyter. Then it's as if he intermarried with Avodah Zarah itself. Because, Dichtiv, while Bas Kelmecha, as the Pasuk says, that he's had relations with the daughter of an alien god. Bas Yeshle the Kelmecha, now does an alien god, does a Getchka have a daughter? Ella Zohar, of course, this, it refers to he has relations with a daughter, with a Goita, and she's considered, so to speak, the daughter of the Getchka, and therefore, in other words, and he's getting involved with her. Well, since the Gemara brought one drasha of Rav Chiya Bar Avuya, so then the Gemara brings another drasha from him, and then we're going to get back to this matter of Havala Kusis. So the Gemara says, "V'omer Rav Chiya Bar Avuya." Rav Chiya Bar Avuya also said another drasha. It was written on the skull of Jehoiakim, this and something else. This Jehoiakim was the third to last king of Malchus Yehuda before the Churban Bayis Rishon. His father Yeshiyahu had been a tremendous tzaddik. Yeshiyahu was unfortunately Jehoiakim was unfortunately the polar opposite. He was a terrible rasha. We're going to learn much more about him in the last perek of Amasechta and perek Chelech Bez Hashem. We'll deal in detail with his averus. In any case, Yirmiyahu said a number of harsh nevuos about him, one of them being, as the Gemara is going to quote over here, that he's not going to get a proper burial. What ended up happening was, during his time, a few years into his reign, Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael and made Jehoiakim his vassal. A few years after that, Jehoiakim revolted. And then Nebuchadnezzar brought his army to Eretz Yisrael, and eventually he was on the verge of conquering Yerushalayim. And then the Medrash goes into the details over there of how the Sanhedrin basically said, Jehoiakim, it's all your fault, and you need to surrender yourself to Nebuchadnezzar, and he refused to, so they threw him out of the city to be surrendered. And in any case, he died. So the Medrash brings different opinions. Is it that he was dead before he was removed from Yerushalayim, or that Nebuchadnezzar killed him, or maybe the Medrash says actually what happened was they were lowering him like down through a hole in the wall to lower him down on a rope to bring to Nebuchadnezzar, and he died on the way down. Whatever the case, Yirmiyahu had said a nevuah about him that he's never going to get a proper burial. So now, Rav Chiya Bar Avuya says that on his skull that was written, Hashem caused there to be written, B'derech Nes, on his skull, this and something else, meaning he's already been punished once, and he's going to have a further part of his punishment as well. So what happened? Zakena did a preda, the grandfather of Reb Preda. And that is this very, and Rashi explains, that is this very same Reb Chiya Bar Avuya. So Reb Chiya Bar Avuya is not to say in the Jerusha, he'll actually be able to tell us the story of what actually happened with that skull. So Zakena did a preda, Ashka, how Gogalta, to have his Shadia Bashari Yerushalayim. He saw a skull that was thrown down and was lying on the ground over there in the gates of Yerushalayim. And it said on the skull, this and something else. And he didn't know whose skull it was. But it's a human skull. You can't allow it to be around over there. It's going to cause tumah. And b'chalal, you have a mitzvah to show respect for the mess. Kovra, so he buried it. V'hodon novog, and then it popped out of the ground again. Kovra, he tried again. V'hodon novog, and again it popped out of the ground. So he realized this is not stam any skull. Omar, he's realized this to himself. Had gugalta show Yehoiakim. This must be the skull of Yehoiakim. Dichtiv Bey, where the pasuk says on him, in Yirmiyah's Nevuah, kvuras chamur yikover, he'll be buried like a donkey. Sochei v'hashlech, dragged out and thrown out, mehola l'shar Yerushalayim, beyond the gates of Yerushalayim. So in other words, therefore he's going to be thrown in the streets, and he's never going to get a proper burial. Marshall points out the word sochov literally means dragged, and he explains like this. It's true, of course, when a donkey dies, you don't actually bury it because it's not a human being, but you still don't want it lying on the ground. It's going to spread disease and all. So you bury it in some kind of shallow grave or something, but then sometimes dogs will go and dig it up and then drag it around. The same way the Novi is saying about Jehoiakim, the same thing is going to happen to him. So now, in other words, his body at one point was buried like in a shallow grave like that, but now it got pulled out of there, and therefore even now, long afterwards, Rav Chiya Bar Avuya lives a couple hundred years later, it seems, and still that skull has never gotten a proper burial. Omar, so he thinks to himself, Malkahu, as much as Jehoiakim was a Rosha, he was a king, V'lav Orech Arel of Azuri, it's not Derech Eretzik that he should have this Bizoyan, that his skull should just remain unburied. But okay, Hashem obviously doesn't want it to be buried, and that's why it keeps on popping out of the ground. So fine, Shakla, he took it, Karcha B'Shiroi, he wrapped it up in silk, Va'osve b'sifta, and he put it into a chest in his house. Later on, Asoy Dvesu, his wife came and saw there was something in the chest, Chazisa. She saw that there's a skull in there, was wondering what's going on. Nafkas Amra Lahulu Shiba Vasaha. She went and told her neighbors, there's a skull in a box in our house. Amri Law, so they told her, Hi de Itza Kamaisahi, this must have been from your husband's first wife who passed away. The Lord Kaminshi Law, he can't forget her, and therefore, like, he's keeping her skull as a souvenir, as a memento of her. Well, she was very upset by that. He shouldn't be still thinking of his first wife. Shagarta Latanura, she fired up the oven, Rav Chiya Bar Avoya's wife, Vakalta, and she burnt the skull. He also, when Rav Chiya Bar Avoya came and saw what happened, Amar, he says, now I understand. This is what it meant. This and something else, that Yehoyakim got this double punishment. First that he died under circumstances like that and didn't get a proper burial, and now that even his skull couldn't find any rest, and then ended up getting burned like that. So now, in other words, he got his kapara. Later on, and then in the last perek, when we deal with the people who lost their place in Olam Haba, the Gemara is going to deal with why Yehoyakim is not on that list, considering what a vile Rasha he was. And basically, the answer is that this story that we're saying over here was his kapara, was the kapara that he needed, and therefore he's able to have a place in Olam Haba after all. Okay. Getting back to the case of a yid has relations with a goita, so the Gemara says ki osid of Dimi Omar. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported base dinah shochashmenoi gozu. The base dinah of the chashmenoim, which was many hundreds of years earlier, we're talking about the time of the Nes Chanukah. So they made a gzera habana kusis chayav aleha mishem nashga. He's high of punishment, he's high of malchus, or makas maudus, by based in on the grounds of four things. Nashga stands for nida, shivcha, goya, and eshethish. None of these things apply to her daraisa. Nida, for example, only applies to Jews, but the chachamim made a gzera that we still consider because there's a desecration of Hashem's name, because after all, like we said, like we quoted before, the pasuk from Malachi of what a serious issue it is, so the Chachamim found it necessary to put these penalties on him, as though he had relations with a nidda, shifcha, and a shifcha maidservant. Now, this goyish woman is not necessarily a maidservant. She may well be a free woman, but Rashi says relative to the Jewish people are called gvira, like the queen, so relative to them, anybody else is considered a shifcha. The third one is goya, the fact that she's a goita. Now, you do have an issur in the Torah, lois ischaten vav, not to marry goitas. But that would only be derech chasnus. That would only be if it was an actual marriage. Here we're talking about where they just have relations. So the Beis Din Shochashminoi are saying that nevertheless he has relations with her even outside of marriage. We're going to punish him as though there was an actual marriage over there. B'chlal, you have on top of that, you have an opinion, you have a machlokas Reb Shimon and the Chachamim elsewhere in Shas, whether the issur in the Torah applies to all goyish nations or just to the seven nations of Canaan. But whatever, the point is that the Beis Din Shochashminoi extended that issur and said that we're going to impose a penalty on him for being over on that issur in a certain sense as well. And the fourth one is Eishes Ish, that she's a married woman, and again, now Goyim do have a concept of marriage between them. We learned earlier when we learned about the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, we learned all about that they have a concept of Eishes Ish. Their concept of it is different than ours, but relative to a Yid, it wouldn't necessarily be considered Ishus, but here the Chachamim, the Beis Din Shochashminoi, are imposing on him also the Isser. If she's an Eishes Ish, then you have that, as if she's a married Goyish woman, even though their marriage is not considered a marriage relative to us, but here we're going to impose that punishment on him as well. He also, Robin, Omar, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he says, actually, it's slightly different, Mishum Nashgaz. The four things are, because of the Nashgaz, Nida Shifcha Goya, the fourth one is Zoyna. The fourth one is that there's an issue of Zoyna. Now, a Kohen has an issue to marry or to have relations with a Zoyna. So Tosfos points out over here that we're talking specifically if he's a Kohen. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that no, it means that Rashi also is also in Masechta Avodah Zarah. Rashi brings over there where this Gemara is brought over there. Also, Rashi also explains that this fourth one of the Zoyna would only be if she's a Kohen. On the other hand, the Rambam says that no, it applies to everyone. Once we say that it applies to a Kohen, it also applies to a Yisrael. The Or HaNer points out actually that Rambam Bechlal holds that any relations outside of marriage are also on the grounds of the pasuk we brought before, La Yekodesh and La Yekvesh. So therefore, the Rambam can understand that there's an Isser of Zoyna for Yisrael as well, in the sense that just having relations outside of marriage itself is an Isser in Atorah for him, and there's Vechi of Malkus. So therefore, now the Chachamim, the Beis Din Shel Chashmonai, are extending it to a Goyish woman as well. Anyway, the point is, why is Robin saying differently? Why is he not including the Aleph of Eches Ish? Avim is from Ishus. Less for who? He says that Ishus is not a factor over here, that she's a married woman. That's not going to be a factor over here, because the marriage between two goyim, between a goy and a goita, is not really considered relative to Jews, is not really considered a marriage, and therefore you can't say that if a yid is mizana with her that he's being over on Eches Ish. The idach, however, Rav Dimi, who did mention Eishes Ish, he says, Neshayu vader le-mifkari, listen, their own married wives, they're certainly not going to be treating with such hefkeros, so in that sense, their wives are, their marriages are considered valid enough, al-pi alocha, that if now a yid is mizana with her, then therefore we can still get him on the grounds of Eishes Ish. In other words, basically, Rav Dimi and Robin are arguing: does the marriage of a goy and a goita have any validity at all in the Torah, or is it just considered as though they were not married at all? Rav Dimi is saying yes, they are considered married via yid as well, and therefore there can be the Isser of Eishes Ish. Whereas Robin says basically, even though they have a ceremony of marriage and everything, nevertheless, relative to us Jews, it doesn't count as anything. They're mufker, they're promiscuous, and therefore we don't really care about their marriages at all. Tosfos goes into some detail explaining over here in general about there's one ground of Zoyna. But that doesn't apply to a goita, that doesn't apply, it only applies to a giyotis or mishachreres or whatever, and Tosfos goes on in some detail discussing the ins and outs of this, when we say that a goita or a giyotis is considered a zoina, and when not, so there's details within that. But again, you can say that even where it's not osim in atorah, nevertheless the chachamim still included as well. Okay, further on this matter of kanoim, so now getting back to this matter of kanoim poigin, right? Omer of chista haboli molech, if a person comes to ask in Beis Din whether there's this guy who's having relations with a goita, and I know about it, should I do something about it? Ein modin lo, we don't paskin to him that he should. One point is, many of the Mephoshim explain that the idea behind that is, because again, in other words, the whole point is, he's supposed to be a kanoi. He's supposed to be a kanoi, and so only if he's mekane by himself, but not if he actually has to ask in Beis Din, then that shows that he's not such a kanoi, and in that case, then he doesn't really have rishus to do it in the first place. As I mentioned before, there's a sticha where the Rebbe talks about various details in this story over here, and one point is this point of breaking down the barrier between a yid and a goy. Is something the separation that there should be between a yid and a goy has to do with the etzem and the shoma, and therefore it's like something beyond the whole concept of Torah. So in modern life, it has to be that it touches the person in his etzem and the shoma and makes him realize he has to act rather than that he's going to go and ask in Beis Din. So Itmar Nami, they said also, Omer Rav Babachana Omer Rav Yechanan, Boli Molech in Merin Loi, Veloi Oid. Not only that, there's another special din in this as well. She in Pirash Zimri, Vahogai Pinchas, had Zimri actually separated himself from Cosby in that story, and if Pinchas had killed him then, Nerag Olav, then Pinchas would actually be liable to be Chayav Misa, because he would actually be chayiv misa, because then he killed somebody where he didn't have the right to. So in other words, this concept of kanoim kogim is only when it's actually in the act, as in fact happened with Zimri and Cosby, when Pinchas, as we know, he spewed them through as they were in the act. And here in that sicha that Eber talks about, again, the idea behind it is that even though in general a person does an aveira, it brings in koichas into tuma. But on the other hand, you have that there's a certain sense in which that happens only at the moment when he's doing it, only when he's actually causing the kedusha to go into tumah. Then it's happening afterwards. So therefore, it's only b'shas ma'isa, and afterwards, after he leaves her, then you still have an ongoing effect of it, which is what we were saying before, that he can be chayiv kares and so on and so forth. And of course, if there are children from it, the children are going to be goyim, and that's an ongoing thing. But nevertheless, you still have it was only a b'shas ma'isa that was actually taking place, and therefore only then can kanoim koyin, right? And furthermore, continues Rava Bava Hana, Nepach Zimri v'horga l'Pinchas. Here's another din. What would happen if Zimri would turn around and kill Pinchas? He sees Pinchas coming about to kill him for having relations with the goita, and he turns around and kills Pinchas in self-defense. A neragolav. Then Then Zimri wouldn't be punishable by Beis Din for that. He can't be killed for that. Sharei roidif, because Pinchas is after all a roidif. Now there is a good deal of discussion among Rishonim whether in fact the Boil Aramis is actually Chayev Misa, and just that the Torah is saying in this case we're not giving over his Misa to Beis Din, we're leaving it up to the Kanoi, or is it that he's not really Chayev Misa at all, but more that the Kanoi himself has a mitzvah to be Pageya in him. So the Ran, the Yad Raman, other Rishonim discuss back and forth about this point. So this point over here of Nepach Zimri v'Hogel Pinchas, it fits very well with the idea that he's not actually Chayev Misa, and therefore, so now he has a right to kill Pinchas in self-defense. An interesting point in that, actually, the tour points out, a third party would not be able to do that. Zimri himself can protect himself from Pinchas by killing Pinchas, but a third party would not be allowed to intervene over there. In fact, the Beis Yosef points out it's a very poshut thing. So he doesn't even bring it in Shulchan Aruch because it's such a poshut, obvious thing. Then you have there's a further discussion. Would it mean that Zimri actually has to remove himself from Cosby in order to have that right to kill Pinchas, or does he have the right even when he's still with her? So there's discussion about that, and that sicha that Rebbe also talks about there's sort of certain details behind that. In fact, the Rambam's loshen, unlike the Gemara over here, is nepach Zimri, which means that Zimri turns around. The Rambam's loshen on it is nishmat Zimri, that if Zimri were to withdraw, implying that according to the Rambam, at least it would actually have to be, if he's taka b'shas ma'isa, he wouldn't have the right to kill Pinchas, because then instead, we learned in the seventh parak, on Dafayin Gimel, all about a roidif, that when you're killing a roidif, you do have a responsibility to try to first wound him instead of killing him, meaning, in other words, you can't just start with killing him, you have to try other ways around it first. By the same token over here, given that he can't be killed, given that Zimri can't be killed, if he withdrew, then why should he have the right, while he's still with her, to go and kill Pinchas? He should have to first at least exit, and only then would he have the right to kill Pinchas in self-defense. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who don't learn that way, and they say maybe you have a raya from that, in fact, that a nirduf is able to kill the roidif outright, and this whole concept of saving him with only one of his limbs is only for a third party to deal with it, not for the nirduf himself. Maybe the nirduf himself is allowed to begin with to go and kill the roidif. Reb Moshe, in these two chuvas that I mentioned before, also has a lot of interesting discussion and details about these various things. First of all, of course, as the Gemara is going to say over here, this whole thing is only b'fa hesia, doesn't apply if it's b'tzina. You also have the consideration, is the goita herself also chayev misa? The Rambam says that yes, even later on, you kill her because a yid had takola through her. He compares it to the way that we kill a behema, where a man committed bestiality, where a Jewish man or woman committed bestiality reality with it, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. So then that means that's a different din. That's not part of this Kanoin Poygenboy. That's a separate, that's a separate point, but it would only apply with Fahasia, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of discussion about these various points. Okay. So now let's go into the story of Zimri and Cosby and how Pinchas killed them and analyze different details in the story. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Moshe al Shofti Yisrael v'Gomer." So what happens is the Jewish men are getting involved with Bnos Moav over there, Bnos Moav in Midian, and they're also worshiping Avodah Zarah. So then, and plague breaks out. So Vayomer Moshe al Shofti Yisrael v'Gomer. So Moshe says to the Shoftim, "Go and start killing people to who are getting involved with Baal Peor." So, Holach Shivte Shol Shimon, Eitzel Zimri Ben Solu. Shevet Shimon, who was particularly involved with this, they went to the Nossi Zimri Ben Solu, also known as Shlumiel Ben Tzuri Chadai, as the Gemara is going to point out later on. We see that Shevet Shimon was particularly involved with this. In fact, Rashi mentions on the Psukim in Parshas Pinchas, you find by the next census that they took after that, you find that Shevet Shimon was down by 37,000 since the first census in Parshas Bamidbar. So Rashi says it seems all the 24,000 who were killed in the plague were from Shevet Shimon. The Zohar actually goes further and says it wasn't even people from Shevet Shimon themselves, but rather people from the Erev Rav who had intermarried into Shevet Shimon. Anyway, so they went to Zimri ben Solu, Amurlo, they said, Hein Donin Dinin Nefashis. They're judging us, Dinin Nefashis, because Moshe is saying they have to set up Bote Dinim and start judging people. V'ata Yosha V'shoisek, you're sitting here and being quiet, stand up on our behalf. Ma'osa, so what he did, Omad V'kibitz Esmer Rabba Elef Yisrael, he went and gathered together 24,000 people from his Shevet. Those are the 24,000 who, as we're gonna say, ended up getting killed in the plague. By the way, there are places it talks about in Sifrei Kabbalah that Zimri was later on, Zimri and Cosby were later on Nisgalgal in Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus' wife. We had a name Yaakov not so long ago that Turnus Rufus' wife tried to seduce Rabbi Akiva and he went in and he had nothing to do with her, and later on she was Nisgaya and he married her and she brought him tremendous wealth, and Rabbi Akiva, as we know, had 24,000 Talmidim. So it's all part of that. In other words, he was finally Misakin. As Kisvei Arizal go into more detail about that, but it goes back further to Shechem and Dinah, that there was each time there was a spark of Kedusha that needed to be extracted over there, but it was being done in the wrong way, and then finally Rabbi Akiva and then Turnus Rufus' wife were able to accomplish it in the right way. So there's an explanation even along those lines that Zimri is trying to do that as well. He's trying to bring out sparks of Kedusha from Cosby, but unfortunately, as we'll see over here, he went about it the wrong way. Anyway, so he gathers together 24,000, v'holach etzel Cosby, and he goes to Cosby. Omer lo, he says, Ashmi, listen to me, let's have Tashmish. Omer lo, she says, Basmelech ani, I'm a princess, I'm a daughter of a king. V'chein tziva li avi, my father gave me specific instructions, lo tishomi elo legado shabahem. The only one you should submit to is the greatest among them. Meaning, in other words, I'm after Moshe, I don't care about you. Zimri says to her, Afu Nasi Shevetu, you know what, I'm a Nasi of a Shevet, I'm pretty important as well. Veloy Oid, Elashahu Godum Rimenu. Not only that, I'm even greater than Moshe in a way. Through Sheni Labetin, Vuhu Shlishi Labetin. I am the Nasi of Shevet Shimon, which is the second of Yaakov and Leah's children. And Moshe is from Levi, who's the third one. So therefore, I outrank him. All right, well, she's agreeable to it. Tofsa b'vlurissa, so now he held on to her by her bluris. A bluris is a shock of hair, a chup that goyim would wear. Even nowadays, you have goyim who wear such hairstyles. So it was a symbol of her goyishkeit. There's an explanation on it that's basically what it means. Ben Yehoyada says something along these lines. Others also that the idea is, you know, with this tofsa b'vlurissa represents that he's actually going to have her as a goyish woman. He's not going to wait to be megayer her or anything like that. He wants to have the goyish type. Anyway, so he holds her by the bluris. At the Havia Eitzel Moshe, and he brings her to Moshe. Omaloi says, Ben Amram zu asura o muteres. Is this woman asur or muter to me? The imtomer asura, and if you're going to say she's asur, bas yisrei mihi tiraloch, then who was matir you to marry the daughter of yisrei, who's also the daughter of a goy? Now, the obvious difference being that was before Matan Torah. But so in a way, it was kind of an excuse just to start up with Moshe. But with that said, we don't find Moshe answering over here, and different Mephoshim talk about different reasons why that is. Why Taka doesn't Moshe say the obvious thing? That was before Matan Torah, and we all became Gerim at Matan Torah, and this is after, and then this is after, and therefore, and then you're not planning to be Megayer her, and therefore that's different. So Moshe didn't answer that. Mephoshim give a variety of reasons why. One point is we find that Moshe was also a Kohen, and a Kohen is also in a Giyota, so that was part of the argument as well. There's different points about it, but there's another Sicha in Chelek Yud Ches actually where the Rebbe talks about the idea that whatever answers Moshe could give would basically be, first of all, he realizes Zimri is not coming over here to ask a genuine Shiloh, just basically to store it up, so better not to deal with him, let's leave the Kanoim to deal with him, and in any case, for Moshe to say something would be, it's called, Tamen Chacham is Moda Halacha, if it's B'Shas Maisa, and he's Negev B'Dover, then we don't necessarily accept what he says. So here, if Moshe had whatever answer Moshe had given, you would say, you know what, he's only saying it because he wants to defend himself right now and not because this is truly the halacha. So therefore, Moshe didn't reply. Anyway, so nis'alma menu halacha. So now Moshe forgot what the halacha is to do at that point. About what we do with such a person, with a yid who's going to have relations with a goita. He forgot about that point of kanoyin poivin boy. There is also actually an explanation that the Iyun Yaakov brings that he forgot the halacha that would have said that he has a legitimate reason to be married to Bas Yisrael. So he forgot the halacha. Go kolam bevchia. Everybody started crying that Moshe is helpless and he doesn't know what to do. Thus the pasuk continues after we said that Moshe called together the shoftim and told them to judge and start punishing everybody. And the pasuk says that the pasuk describes how Zimri, how Ish mi b'nei Yisrael, a man from b'nei Yisrael, only in Parshas Pinchas does it identify him by name, brings his ameh hasamidyonis in front of Moshe and in front of b'nei Yisrael, v'heim avoichim, and they're crying. So what's the connection that they're crying? Is because Moshe had forgotten the halacha. Marshall also points out over here that since the pasuk doesn't identify him and her by name yet, so therefore it means that right now he's arguing as a yid and a goy. In other words, so he's bringing the din of this goyta to Moshe. Is she also a mutter? And then he's like speaking, so to speak, on behalf of the Jewish people, or at least on behalf of the members of his shevet. And now we're mentioning the Oyel Moed. Usually Moshe would get instructions from the Oyel Moed, from Hashem speaking over there, what to do, and he all of a sudden, he wasn't hearing anything from Hashem, and therefore everybody's crying by the Oyel Moed. The pasuk continues, Vayar Pinchas Uchtiv, the pasuk continues, Vayar Pinchas Ben Elazar, so Pinchas saw what's going on, Ma Ra, now what did he see? Now it can't just mean he saw with his eyes, everybody was seeing with their eyes, so therefore it has to mean something more than that. Omarav, Ra Maisa V'Nizkor Halacha, he saw what's going on, and he remembered the halacha, so here Moshe had forgotten it, and nobody else knew what to do, but Pinchas remembered. Omalo, he says, Achi Avi Abba, great uncle. Pinchas was the grandson of Aaron, who's Moshe's brother. Loikach lematani beritcham har Sinai. Didn't you teach me when you came down from har Sinai? Haboil adamas kanoin poigin boy. Amalai said, so Moshe tells him, as the expression goes, Kayona de igor to ihulevi pravanka. The one who reads the letter should be the messenger. In other words, so you're reading, you're remembering the halacha. You go ahead, be the messenger. Go ahead and do it. So that's one explanation of what Pinchas saw. Ushmuel, Amar Shmuel says a different answer. Ra she'ein chochma ve'ein tvuna ve'ein etzel neged Hashem. Pinchas saw and realized the fact that al pi Torah we say that there's no chochma and no wisdom and no understanding and no etzah against Hashem, which means kol mokam she'esh chilul Hashem. Whenever there's a chilul Hashem involved, ein chok and kovod l'rav, we do not show respect to a rav. Usually, a talmid is not allowed to pass in halacha in front of his rebbe. But here he is. Now, usually the Gemara mentions that's a very serious thing. But here, because there's a Chilul Hashem, then people are going to learn that such a thing is mutter. So therefore, Pinchas realized he had to take action, even though it seems to be a slight to Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's the second explanation. Rabbi Yitzchak Omar, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yitzchak says in the name of Rabbi Elazar, a third explanation of what Pinchas saw, Rosh Bar Malach V'Hishvis Ba'am. He saw that a Malach is coming and destroying the people, a plague had broken out, and therefore he has to realize that he has to take action. Well, the pasuk says, Vayakam Mitocha Eder, he stood up from among the congregation, Vayikach Reimach V'Yodah, and he took a spear in his hand. Now, her Eder often means the Sanhedrin, or the people who are sitting together and learning and teaching Torah. So Mikan Shein Nechnosim, the Klei Zayin, the Beis Medrash. From here we learn that you don't take weapons into the Beis Medrash. So up until now, he was part of the Eder, he was part of the Sanhedrin, who are judging the people, then he didn't have the weapon with him. So now, only now did he take it. In Shulchan Aruch, there's a din that you're not allowed to take a long knife into a shul. Although the poskim don't seem to bring this gemara in this connection, there is taka sitra halacha, but they don't seem to mention this point over here as a basis behind that. Anyway, Shalach Shnana, now what he did was, he can't very well walk into the tent with his sword drawn, everybody will see him, they'll prevent him from going in. So he took off the point of the sword, the Hinicha Ba'unkaloi, and put it in his clothing, he hid it in his clothing. So now the rest of it is not a sword, the rest of it basically amounts to a walking stick. He's walking along and walking on his walking stick. So that way they don't realize what he's coming for. The Kivinshi Gietz of Shivte Shor Shimon, when he came to shave at Shimon, and then to the tent where Zimri and Cosby are inside, he uses an excuse. Omar, he has to get in. Omar, he says, Heichen Matzinu Shor Shivte Shor Levi, Godom Mishal Shimon. Where do we find that Levi is greater, that Shevet Levi is greater than Shimon? Meaning, in other words, if you guys are going to be involved with these women, then in that case, then Shevet Levi is no less important than that, and therefore that I'm going to come in and join in. I'm going to come and join in as well. So he uses that as an excuse in order to be able to infiltrate over there. One interesting explanation about that. What does he mean? What does he mean by that? So he means, in other words, when it comes to Arias, after all, we shave at Shimon and Levi back in the day. We both went and wiped out the whole city of Shechem for what they did to Dina. We stood up against Arias. So now, also, if you guys think that this kind of thing is mutter, then we shave at Levi are going to join in with you as well. Omru, so they said, Hanichuloi, so leave him alone. Afulas Tsrachal Nichnas, evidently he wants to go in there for his needs as well. He also wants to be Mizana with her. Marshall explains, this is why you have the Pasuk, Vayovei Achal Ish Yisrael. The Pasuk says, he came in after the man of Yisrael into the tent. So it means they let him come in after, meaning thinking, in other words, he wants to do the same thing. They thought to themselves, Yitiru Prushin Esadavar, look at this, the Prushin, the Chachamim, evidently have been mocked this kind of thing, because they knew up until then, Pinchas is a good guy, a tzaddik, and therefore, if he's doing this, if he's coming in for this purpose, it must mean that such a thing is mutter. Well, instead, of course, he went in to kill them. So, the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shisha Nisim Nasul of the Pinchas. At that point, six Nisim happened to Pinchas, that he was able to kill them. Echad Chayla LeZimri Lifresh V'Lei Pirish. Number one, Zimri could have separated himself from Cosby, and as we just said on Amun Aleph, if he had, then Pinchas can't kill him anymore. But he didn't. So that was a nest in itself. The Echad Chayla LeDaber V'Lei Diber. A second one is he could have called out. He could have called to the people of his shaven, who are right outside, to help him and go and defend him. And he didn't. The echot shekiven bezachrusi shel isha v'nachrusa shel isha. The third one is that Pinchas was able to aim and get right through his zachrus and hunakrus. So that way, when he brought them outside, then everybody could see that that was why he killed them. So now they knew. So in other words, people shouldn't think that Sam that he hated him. Now they realize that he has a very good reason to kill him because they can actually see them in that position. Another one is that they didn't fall off the So Rashi explains that it means that they didn't separate from one another. That's like this. He's coming to kill them. You would have thought, even fine, he doesn't want to separate, but maybe she would. They're about to be killed. In other words, forgetting about the din that if perish then ein neragolav, as a practical spear, as a practical thing, people see that somebody is about to kill the sword, is about to kill them with a spear. Then for that reason alone, they should be separating. That's how Rashi explains. There are other mefarshim who explain that it means, in other words, Poshet now is carrying them outside on the spear. It's a little hard to balance bodies like that without them falling off, so it was a nest that they didn't fall off.
From all this we learned in the past. From all this that we learned in the past, did he have to give them a warning? You're not allowed to do this and this and this?
So Mephoshim say over here that no, all these things of Kanoi and Pergenboy, given that all these things by definition are bemazed, then no, the Yad Ramah points out that no, we don't need Hasra in any of these cases. So no Hasra is necessary, and obviously if there was Hasra, it would kind of defeat the purpose, then he would just be Nishmak, he would just withdraw, and then again, he can't be killed anymore. So no, the point is that no Hasra is needed. Good point. Thank you for mentioning that. Okay, so the Gemara goes on. Another one is the Malach came and lifted up the lintel of the door, meaning it was the door of the tent wouldn't have been tall enough for him to be able to carry them with the sword upraised and the body still hanging off it. So like this, he was able to take them out. Otherwise, he would have had to lower down the spear to get out the door, and they would have fallen off. And the sixth one is that a malach came and was destroying the people. In other words, like this, their people are dying over there, and therefore they didn't kill Pinchas as soon as he came out of the tent, because they're busy with that. Why Dafka six nisim? There's a number of different points about that. An interesting one, the Maharal says that when he was Makadosh Shem Shemayim Barabim, meaning in other words that he demonstrated that Hashem rules over, the same way as we wave the lulav in all six directions to represent that Hashem rules over every direction. So the same way Pinchas was accomplishing the same thing Barabim, and for that he was there for the six nisim. Maharal points out that actually a Medrash says that there are the Medrash actually mentioned six more as well. So six and six. Here are Gemara mentioning only six. But then, Baba Chavtan Lifnei Amakim. Now, after it was all over, and now he had brought out the bodies and shown everybody what was going on, then Pinchas came and threw down the bodies in front of Hashem. Omer Lefanav, he says, Ribono Shel Olam, Al Elu Yiplu Esrim Rabba Elef Yisrael. Is it right that because of these two people's Aveda, 24,000 Jews should be killed? Shenema, as the pasuk had said, by you are Mason Mamagefa, Balva Esther Moloch. The ones who were killed in the plague were 24,000. So now, like he's so to speak, complaining to Hashem that after all you didn't have to be so harsh on the Jewish people. Thus the pasuk says, Pinchas stood up by Yafalel. Now the simple meaning of by Yafalel is to execute judgment. So therefore it would mean that he judged Zimri and Cosby, and he was Machayev and Misa, and he killed them. But the Gemara is also understanding, Vayifalo Meloshit Tzila. Omer Abolaz, Vayifalo, Loinema, Ela Vayifalo. So it doesn't say Vayifalo, which would be the normal thing, that he would mean that he daven, Ela Vayifalo. Melamed, Kaviyochosh, also Plilus Imkoinei. That he, so to speak, made a judgment against Hashem, saying, in other words, Hashem, how could you do such a thing? So therefore, Vayifalo, that he argued with Hashem that it was not right, that Hashem shouldn't have done such a thing. Bikshu Malachi Asharis L'doichvay, that Malachi Asharis want to come and push him away and harm him. What are you talking like that to Hashem? Omalahen, but Hashem tells them, Hanichuloi, leave him alone, Kanai ben Kanaihu. He's a zealous one, the descendant of a zealous one. His ancestor Levi was zealous for the honor of Dina, and to stand up against Arias back in the day. And he's also following in the way of Shimon and Levi said. So now, Pinchas is following in that way. Ben Meshiv Chema, he's also the one who turns away Hashem's anger, descendant of one who turned away Hashem's anger. Back in Parshas Korach, there had also been a plague because the Jewish people were complaining against Hashem. And Aaron had brought Ketores and then stopped the plague and taken away Hashem's anger. So now Hashem is telling the Malachim that now that Pinchas has also done the same thing. He's followed in his grandfather's footsteps and he's taken away Hashem's anger from the Jewish people. And therefore, so no, he doesn't deserve punishment. On the contrary, he deserves great reward for that. This that we're saying, by the way, that he's from Shevet Levi, and they had that, whereas we're saying Shevet Shimon went the wrong way. There's a Medrash, actually, that mentions a comparison for it. The Medrash says you have two people who borrowed money from the king. One of them invests it wisely and takes care of his money, and eventually he's able to return his loan, and not only that, eventually the king needs money, and he's able to lend him money. The other one mismanaged the money, and he ended up having to borrow again and again. So the Medrash says that's similar to Shimon and Levi. Here they, so to speak, borrowed from Hashem, like they owe Hashem one for having done in the matter of Shechem and Dina, even though, okay, we're saying they stood up for what's true, and against Nus and all that. Nevertheless, Yaakov criticized them for that. They did it in the wrong way. So like now they're in debt to Hashem now. Levi not only paid back the debt when it came to the Chet Egel, now even they're beyond paying it back. It's like Hashem owes them one, but this is with the story of Pinchas, where now Hashem owes him one, and Hashem pays him back and gives him bris kohanas olam for it. As opposed to Shevet Shimon went worse and worse, and they ended up going wrong in this matter of Zimri and Cosby and Benos Midian. So they're like the one who borrowed money, and he doesn't know how to manage it correctly and keeps on having to borrow again and again. Well, the Gemara continues. Hischilu shvatim mevazin oisei. At this point, the shvatim were making fun of Pinchas. Re'isim then Puti zeh. You see, the son of Puti, the pasuk in Parshas Va'era says that his ancestor was named Putiel. And Putiel, one meaning of Putiel is it's one of the names of Yisrael. Shepitem avi imay agolam avodas kachavim. His grandfather, Yisrael, fattened up calves for avodah zarah. V'horag nosi shevet meYisrael, and here he went and killed a nosi of a shevet among the Jewish people. So in other words, they're saying basically that he had no right to do that. They're accusing him he's not doing it because out of kanos, but he's doing it out of other reasons. In particular, there's a sicha also in the sicha in Chedek Beis, I think, where the Rebbe talks about that. What they're saying is that Yisrael, it's not just that Yisrael worshipped Rebbe Dezar. He would fatten up these calves, making them think that they're going to have a nice life, and then he goes and cruelly shechs them to Rebbe Dezar. And the same way they're saying, it seems that Pinchas has a streak of cruelty in him also. So instead the pasuk goes and gives his yichus over here, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, that he's the grandson of Aaron HaKohen, who brought shalom between people and between the Jewish people and Hashem, and therefore it means that Pinchas acted along those lines. It's not cruelty that he inherited from Yisrael. On the contrary, it's the greatness that he inherited from the greatness in helping out the Jewish people that he inherited from Aaron. So Amalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Hakdim Lo Shalom. So Hashem tells Moshe, welcome him with peace. Shenemar Hinin Lachen Emor. Therefore, tell him Hinin Noisam Es Brisi Shalom. I'm giving him my covenant of peace. Rashi on the pasuk says it means like when somebody has done you a great favor and you say I want to greet you, I want to honor you for what you did. This is Hashem is saying also as Brisi Shalom Pidush Lo Shlemosav is the expression. Rashi says on the pasuk like Hashem is saying like I want to say a special greeting to you for what you did. So Uruya Kapora Zushema Kaperas Vahilachas Laulam. In fact, this kapora is suitable that it should be machaper forever and ever, which is why Pinchas got a bris kohunas olam. So in other words, not just that, not Marshall says, because not just v'chiper, that he was mechaper, v'yechaper al bnei Yisrael means that he's gonna continue to be mechaper with this for the Jewish people forever. So it's both. He has bris kohunas olam and the fact that it says vayechab. Okay. Going back now to when Zimri and Cosby were together over there. Omer of Nachman Omer Rav. My dichtiv. What does it mean a posik in Mishlei? Zarzir mosnayim oisoyish umelach alkum imoy. This is a very difficult, obscure posik. In fact, Rashi says on the posik of the Mishlei, I don't know what a zarzir masnayim is, and I don't know what melech alkum is. Various mephoshim over there explain that a zarzir masnayim is some kind of very fast, fleet animal, different possibilities that the Mephoshim give of there. Some kind of fast dog, like a greyhound. The Eben Ezra says it might be bees. That we find in the Gemara, Zarzu is a type of bird related to the raven. And the Maharal says over here actually that it means a chicken, a rooster. Anyway, Mosnayim, it has very strong hips. Oisoyish, meaning a male goat. So in other words, the point is that the Pasuk is describing people who was describing things that metive tzad and metive lechas, things that walk very nicely. So you have a zarz and Mosnayim is a creature that's able to run and move very fast. Oisoyish is a goat, a male goat that walks ahead of the herd. Melech Alkum would mean that you can't stand up against him, so a king whom nobody can withstand. So in other words, the Shlomo is mentioning various kinds of things that are unstoppable. So now, the Gemara is going to dash on this regarding the story of Zimri and Cosby. The word Zarzir is Gematria 424. Zion Resh, Zion Yud Resh equals 424. So Arba Meis for Esther Rabba Beilas Bal Oisei Rosha Oisei Ayon. On that day, Zimri committed 424 Beilas with Cosby. The gematria of the word Zarzer. The hint to my Pinchas had to trad. What it in 424 sounds like a tremendous guzma. We'll talk in a second what that means. Pinchas was waiting until he's weaker, because in other words, Pinchas figured that he's not strong enough to be able to get him until Zimri has actually used up a lot of his strength in Bia, and then v'hu eni yadesh melech alkumimai. But Pinchas did not realize that the king whom nobody can withstand, Hashem, who's against whose power nobody can stand, is with him. So why should he have to wait until Zimri weakens his strength with repeated Bias? Instead, he should be able to do it right away. But that's the Pasuk saying. Zarzir is Gematria 424. Masnayim, Meloshin Hamtona, Meloshin Waiting. Oisoyish, until Toshosh, until the strength is weakened. So that was what Pinchas was thinking. That's why he was hesitating, what to do. But he didn't realize a Melech Alkumimah. He didn't realize that Hashem, who's unstoppable, is with him, and therefore he shouldn't have to wait. So one thing Mao Shaw points out is the Zarzir, again, is related, is one explanation of the Zarzir is a bird related, it's a bird from the general family of crows. We're going to talk about the ravens, whatever, we're going to talk about, and then Perek Chelek, when we talk all about the Mabel, we're going to learn over there that the raven was one of the three creatures that even in the Teva mated, even though all the creatures were not supposed to mate with their respective spouses until after the Mabel was over, but the raven was one of the ones who was over on that. Therefore, the raven, or here, the zarzir, who's very closely related to that, is a symbol of that kind of thing, of unrestricted znus, and therefore the pasuk is using it as a metaphor for Zimri. The Maharal discusses in some detail over here. He explains, first of all, that Zarzir refers to a rooster who is known to be very promiscuous, and Mosnayim refers to the fact that he's constantly using his hips to mate with the hens over there, and therefore again it's using it as a metaphor for Zimri over here in the 424. He explains basically as he explains a number of large numbers in the Gemara and other places like that means he had the capability of doing it. Doesn't mean that physically he actually ended up doing 424 times, but in other words, if we think of the Pnimiya Senyanim, the capability that he had, then that was how much he would have been capable of until Pinchas stopped him. B'masnisatona, in a braisa we learn, in a shishim, that he did 60 be'ilas. Now, 424, we have the remez in the word zarzir. 60, Rashi says, I don't know where it's getting it from. The Maharal explains that often the Gemara uses 60 also to mean a complete number, so it means it was complete in his nus. Anyway, 60. Until he became like a Beitza Amuzeres. A Beitza Amuzeres is an egg that the hen has already sat on it and started incubating it, and now the white of it is spoiled. It's not as pure white as it was before. So in other words, it's representing that after all these beilas, his own beitzim became like beitzim muzaris. That is, his zera is now watery and ruined with all these number of times that he's doing beilah. She was like a garden plot full of water. That's how full she was of his zera. Omer Kahana, Omer Shava Beisa, whose seat, her Acharayim, was the size of a Beisa. Again, doesn't mean literally. The Maharal also explains that a saw represents a complete thing, so therefore it represents, in other words, that she was complete and perfect in her znus, basically, that she's into the ultimate degree of znus. Tan Rav Yosef, Kever Shelo Ama, and Rav Yosef says her womb, the entrance to her womb, was the size of an Ama. Again, not meaning literally, but again meaning it was an Ama, also being a complete measure, meaning it was all of these expressions in the Gemara over here, the Maharal explains, means that he and she were both into the ultimate degree of znus, and they were accomplishing it until Pinchas came and stopped them. Okay, so finishing up that story of Cosby and Zimri, the Pasuk names her Cosby. Omer Rav Sheshes, loy Cosby shma el Shvilnai Bastur shma. Her real name was Shvilnai Bastur. So Bastur, it says in the Pasuk. Shvilnai was saying that that was her real name. V'loma nikra shma Cosby shekizva ba'aviha. Because she was disloyal to her father. Because here we said on Amar Aleph, her father had told her the only one she should make herself available to was Moshe Rabbeinu, and he or she fell for Zimri instead. Dabracha Cosby, another reason why she's called Cosby, Sha'omilavia, Kosbi Amze. It's short for the word Kos, which means Shecht. Through me, Shecht this people. In other words, she's willing to, she's a princess, she wouldn't normally be involved in such things, but she's willing to go and make herself Hefker and make herself available for this kind of thing, for Znus, in order to harm and kill the Jewish people. So for that, she's called Cosby, short for Kosbi. Vahainu da Amri Inchi, this is like the expression people say, given that her real name was Shvilnai, people have the expression using the word Shvilnai for a woman who's suspected of Znus. Bain Koni la Urboni, between the reeds and the Arava trees, which is a thing, both reeds and Arava trees grow very thickly, so it's an easy place to do Yichud. My boya, what is this woman doing over here? Bahadi Klippi de Koni, within the shells, the outer layers of the reeds, Shvilnai my boya. What is the Shvilnai doing over there? Gafta leima, she's been mizana against she's been mizana her mother. In other words, she made that now her mother is being called the mother of a zoyna. So in other words, that people would use the word Shvilnai for a woman who's been suspected of yichud and of znus. So we see, and then where did they get that from? Because this Cosby's real name was Shvilnai. So the point of it is, in other words, Maharsha says, a father is not usually going to be masculine his daughter, but she goes into a hefker place, and she ends up being Mizana, and with that, then she's causing a shame ra, bad name, on her mother, that people say, ki'ima bita, like mother, like daughter, and that her mother must have been a zoyna as well. So therefore, that's why the Gemara mentions this expression specifically about her mother. Okay. Omer Rav Yechanan, Chamisha Shemes Yeshloi. Zimri also had five names. Zimri, Uben Solu, Vishol, Uben Aknanis, Vishlumi, Uben Surishadai. So Shol ben Aknanis is mentioned among the children of Shimon, who came down to Mitzrayim. The Gemara is understanding that that's the same one as that's two other names for this Zimri over here. In other words, he lived a long time. Maharsha discusses over here, how could that be? Then why is his father not mentioned among them? One explanation is that, in fact, maybe his father had passed away before they went to Mitzrayim, and he's there as a grandson of Shimon. Why does he have all these names? Zimri al Shanasik Beit HaMuzeres. So Zimri, he's so called because, like we said, he became like a Beit HaMuzeres, like a spoiled egg as a result of all the beers. Ben Solo, after Hisli Avonis Kamishmachtoi, he's called Ben Solo because he caused that the Averis of him and his family are going to be mentioned again and again. Rashi explains, the word Hisli comes from a Lashon that means to describe and to praise. Another explanation is it means also that it causes them to be looked over again and again. Lashon Misalsal Besairei. So he caused that. Shol Ashel Shehishal Asmi L'Dvar Aveira. He lent himself out for a Dvar Aveira. In other words, he should have been beyond that kind of thing. He was up until then a great tzaddik. He was one of the Nasiim, but now like he lent himself out to the Yetzer Hara for this Dvar Aveira. like we said before, you know, you have a pre-Kabbalah that maybe he's trying to accomplish some birur, but he's doing it in the wrong way. So like he lent himself out to be doing it the wrong way. Then a Knan is Ashasa, Maisa Knan. He acted in the way of Knan in Znus. And what's his real name? Shlomiel ben Suri Chadeh Shmoy. His real name is Shlomiel ben Suri Chadeh. Which the Medrash actually says that that means at the time when he was one of the Nasiim bringing the Korbanos for the Chanukah Sabayis, he was still Shlomiel. He was complete with Hashem. And Suri Chadeh, Hashem is his rock. But now, afterwards, at the end of the 40 years, unfortunately, he went wrong and became what he became, became Zimri ben Solu, and then and did the Savera and ended up getting killed by Pinchas.